It's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. Spring came in on Thursday. We've got a little snow on Tuesday. No problem. Just a little decorative, little designer snow on Tuesday. And so gone now, and you can walk down the sidewalk without fear that you're going to break your hip and wind up in a nursing home somewhere, even though you're fairly young. It's Lent. Lent in Lake Wobegon, and it's time for Christians to contemplate their sins and their unworthiness, and to re-examine that thin tissue of lies and rationalizations and justifications with which we hold up our contradictory lives. Kind of a difficult time of year, especially those of us who intend to resume our sins after Lent and to and to go back. I used to be a good person when I was in my 20s, and then I just didn't seem to be getting anything out of it, you know. Where was the joy, I wondered? There wasn't any. I mean, there was a kind of a smug satisfaction that I got from righteousness, but it just wasn't working out for me. And so I tried a few things. I tried gluttony because I had really high metabolism back then. And, of course, lust, because I was that age, and pride, and some anger that wasn't as good. And sloth really has been my favorite. It's been a wonderful, wonderful decades of pure sloth. I go into my workroom. I call it my workroom, though I don't do any work in there, and the top of the desk is just a swamp, just piles of things. So I haven't done anything in there for months, years, actually. And I have all these writing projects left over from the 80s and deadlines and so forth, a memoir that I was supposed to finish years ago, based on you know, recovered memories of an early childhood in Paris, where I was born, and my parents, who were in the resistance, and there was a war going on, and so they sent me over to the States, and they placed me with a Sanctified Brethren family in the Midwest, and there I grew up among people who believed that the end of the world was imminent, and who believed that we must avoid defilement by evil. And so we raised all our own food, and we slaughtered our own chickens, and we couldn't buy even bakery products from bakers, because what if they were bad people? This would defile us. And so we just lived this hand-to-mouth existence there. And I knew these were not the people I came from. I didn't belong there. But my memories of Paris faded, and so hypnosis has brought some of them back, and also smoking these Gauloises cigarettes brings the smell. Memory is tied to smell. Proust said that. Anyway, I'm there. Should be working on this memoir, which is underneath there somewhere, but there are stacks of magazines on my desk and piles of magazines, because to somebody who was brought up by frugal people, magazines cannot be thrown away. There are stories here that I have not read. There are color photographs here. How can you throw this away? And so I keep them all, old issues of Life magazine, and here's a picture of the 1956 Brooklyn Dodgers. I still know the people on this team, Carl Furillo and Duke Snyder and Roy Campanella and Jackie Robinson playing first base and then third base, and Sal Magley. And this young guy who grew up in Brooklyn, Sandy Koufax, and all these players, I still know this lineup. I'm not done reading about these people. I remember the 1965 World Series here in Minnesota, where we took on the Los Angeles Dodgers, and Sandy Koufax was pitching, and he skipped the first game because it was Yom Kippur, and so Don Drysdale pitched that one, and Sandy Koufax pitched the second game, but we beat him. We were up 2-0 to the Los Angeles Dodgers, and I was watching the game on TV. The first color TV I ever saw was at the Gilbertsons' home. I was in love with their daughter, Mary. I'm not sure it was her or the TV or what it was, or the fact that the liquor flowed freely there in the Gilbertson house. We won those first two games of the 65 series, and I assumed we'd go all the way and Minnesota would win. And then Sandy Koufax came back and he shut us out, and they beat us in that seventh game of the World Series. Mr. Gilbertson was sitting on the couch, and he was three sheets to the wind. And when it was clear that we were going to lose, he broke into sobs. He sat there weeping. It was so impressive. She, Mary, the girl I loved, I thought, had gone into the next room, and she had turned on the radio and was listening to music, and she was doing her nails and looking at her sitting in there all smug. I knew that I would never marry somebody who didn't care if Minnesota lost the World Series. You see, I remember all these things because my desk is full of junk and trash, and I don't get anything done. I'm just stirring the swamp here and looking at the past, living in the past. So I don't go to church during Lent. I'll go as soon as it's all over and we're and we're back to normal. Karl Krebsbach does not go to church during Lent either because he's been thinking about robbing a bank. He's the town handyman, and he does everything. He does plumbing, he does electricity, carpentry, contracting, everything. They call him in for home handyman projects that have gone wrong. You know, the man of the house, he wants to put in the ceramic tile, and it all goes to pieces, and it all trails off in strange lines, and the fan and the vent makes a grinding noise, and the wall is loose. It's not fitted properly, and the guy who did all of this goes off to the sidetrack tap and he gets drunk, or he writes an angry letter tearing into the president about something, editor of the paper, and he goes off in the woods and he blows up beer bottles or whatever he does, and they call in Carl and he makes everything right. But he's working for people whose sense of cash values is from back in the 70s. So they don't want to pay more than $100, $150 for something that you'd get paid $700 for if you were doing it for people you did not go to high school with. He just can't get paid what he needs to get paid. They came to him about this crack in the statue of the unknown Norwegian, which is there on Main Street in Lake Wobegon. It was done by a sculptor, an itinerant sculptor named Joe Connell, who came and did this figure of a youth who was pointing heroically off to the west. And the great tornado of 1982 blew some grass seed into the left ear of the statue of the unknown Norwegian, and every spring it has sprouted. Even though they put herbicide on this, they can't kill it off. And somehow this germination has opened a crack, an enormous crack in the side of the Norwegian's head. And they wanted Carl to fix it. Well, now, he said, I don't do statues. He knew that if he did it, they would offer him no more than $200, and that what they will now do is to call in a consultant, and the consultant will call in a stonemason, and they will put in some kind of cement in there, and they will charge $8,000, and the town will pay that happily. They wouldn't pay it to Carl, but they'll pay it to strangers. He could come in and fix it with epoxy, but they wouldn't pay him for it, so he's not going to do it. It's an odd predicament to be in. So he's been casing banks in small towns, driving around wearing a ski mask to see if this attracts any attention whatsoever. He was walking down the street wearing his ski mask in Lake Wobegon, just to get used to the feeling of wool on his face, when the phone rang in that telephone booth, which is near the sidetrack tap. The phone rang. This telephone booth does not work. There is no dial tone. But ever so often, like once every 3 or 4 years, the phone rings. And he was walking by it, and the phone rang. And he picked it up, and the woman said, "Is George there?" Well, he said, I don't know any George, but this phone is not. Well, she said, I called him at this phone. I called him a week ago. You're sure there's no? No, there is no George there. This is Lake Wobegon, Minnesota. She said, are you joking? No, he said. What? She said, if you see George, tell him now is the time. Now is the time to do it. He needs to do it now. Well, it was a mysterious message to get. And then he went down to the Chatterbox Cafe, and he sat there. Mr. Berge said, could you help me get my fish house off the lake? It kind of got melted into the ice, and now I can't move it, and I want to get it before the ice goes. No, I can't. I don't do ice houses. He knows Berge. Berge would offer him $25. He saw a car pull up outside, and it was Liz's old boyfriend, Cliff, who Liz dumped about a month and a half ago. He pulled up in his old Ford Fairlane, and he parked there in front of the Chatterbox. And he looked sad and thoughtful. And Carl went out and talked to him, asked him how everything is. Oh, about the same. How you doing? Oh, not so great. But spring is here. Yeah, spring is here. Yeah, I'm thinking about moving south. They talked for a while. Then Cliff drove away. A little sadness there. He came back in, had the pancakes and the syrup, fresh syrup out of the trees. Darlene was talking about George, her cat. George, who got in a fight with a bat. A bat was flying around Darlene's bedroom, and she woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and this bat was swooping around, and the cat was going crazy, and the cat was up on the headboard, and the cat leaped towards the bat, who was just cruising in, and there was this violent battle, and the bat was killed, and Darlene put on gloves, and she got up, and she took the carcass, and she threw it out in the garbage, and the next day, she took George into the vet, and the vet said, well, where's the bat? We've got to take him. Examine the bat, see if he has rabies. Well, I threw him away. Well, then you better put George down, because he could be carrying rabies, and you wouldn't know about this for months, maybe even years. This all happened back in November, and now it's March, and she's been watching her cat very closely, because she could not bring herself to put down her pal, who's been so true to her as she's dated this whole series of losers. George, sweet George, every night when she goes to sleep, she thinks about rabies. She's read everything there is on the internet about rabies. She's an expert on rabies. She knows all the traits, all the signs. George has seemed just a little logy these days. He seems to be salivating more than usual. She's not sure. Every night she looks at George and she says a little prayer and then she goes to sleep. This is faith. This is true faith. Her cat may be dangerously sick, but she keeps him out of loyalty. I used to be a good person like that. Not anymore. Why should I lie to you? No. Carl sat listening to this story about George, thinking about the phone call in the phone booth that doesn't work anymore. Thinking about the crack in the statue of the unknown Norwegian. And before I knew it, it was 9:30. 9:30. He hadn't accomplished a single thing. I know what that's like. Story of my life. Welcome to the club. And what have you been doing for the last 15 minutes? That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking. All the children are above average.